This is Radio Superior, 1956. A reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s.
Come, let's stroll across the floor.
This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
Now turn around, baby. Let's go once more.
Hey, all you guys, dolls, cats, and kittens. Tim Michaels here, rocking your world. It's a Radioactive Thursday, August 2nd. 1956. Pat Kelly in for Lou Martin with the 6 o'clock news. We'll have a live shot with the farm guy on the release of a bunch of quackers. Harriet is at a kitty parade. Meow. And the most fun will be the testing of the new City of Superior, we're all going to die, civil defense sirens. And I've got a way for you cats and kittens to help out with the drill.
Didn't learn from your trip to the police station for your little stunt about turning over junk cars that said, I flipped for Tim Michaels, huh?
The front page article about my arrest was the end.
Apparently not.
Gambles is picking up the light bill tonight. Gambles has a furniture clearance that's going to fracture you, baby. They've got a five-piece chrome dinette set for $69 and a four-piece bedroom suite for just $119. Gambles, 1109 Tower Avenue in Superior. Now, Pat Kelly with History in the Making.
Thanks, Tim, and good evening, listeners. Egypt takes over the Suez Canal while Britain and France go on a war footing, and the last surviving member of the Civil War's Grand Army of the Republic dies in Duluth. We begin our world report from London.
This is London calling. Malcolm Brown, your correspondent. Prime Minister Anthony Eden's government put Britain on what he called a little war footing in the Suez Canal crisis today. He warned Britons in Egypt to come home while there was still time. France also ordered precautionary military measures. At the same time, the United States, France, and Britain put finished to a plan to summon an international conference to place the Suez Canal under international control. Queen Elizabeth II interrupted a holiday at Arundel Castle to sign an emergency proclamation, giving the government sweeping mobilization powers. Accusing Egyptian President Gamal Abdel Nasser of quoting now, broken faith, broken promises, unquote, Mr. Eden announced the military move to a cheering House of Commons. He says certain naval, army, and air force units had been ordered to the Mediterranean and a limited number of specialized reservists called up. The French Navy Ministry disclosed that 15 warships have been ordered to be ready to steam to an unknown destination. The orders are in conjunction with Nasser's move last week to nationalize the Suez Canal. Mr. Eden says the British Commonwealth will accept nothing short of an international authority operating the canal. He charged Nasser with violating the International Act of 1888, establishing the international character of the canal. In the 1954 treaty, Britain withdrew her military forces from the Suez Canal. In London, this is Malcolm Brown speaking.
In New York, this is William L. Ryan, AP. When Nasser realized his latest bombshell, nationalization of the Suez Canal, diplomats could seek the answer in Nasser's own words. He wrote down his dream, published last year as a book, Egypt's Liberation, The Philosophy of the Revolution. The thoughts it expresses were disturbing enough to cause Premier Guy Mollet of France to call it a new Mein Kampf, in which an Oriental Hitler laid bare his boldest dreams. At 38, Nasser is new to politics. A military man since his academy days 20 years ago, he sprang almost overnight from army obscurity to a commanding position in the sprawling Arab world. He has given the Western world one headache after another. Does this mean he sought to control all the Middle East and North Africa? Does his ambition extend to all Africa? Nasser's own words could be interpreted that way. The book began as a series of jottings when he was an officer in Palestine, hemmed in by Israelis in the sun-baked Fallujah pocket. Concerned with Egypt's history of misery under corrupt regimes, he met and plotted with other young officers who were to overthrow King Farouk in 1952. Now, his plot continues. In New York, this is William L. Ryan, AP.
This is Alfred M. Schock in New Orleans. The Air Force disclosed today that it expects its surface-to-surface guided missiles of the future to replace piloted aircraft on about half of the missions of the Strategic Air Command. Seven generals of the Air Research and Development Command are taking part with Air Force Undersecretary James Douglas in the nation's first guided missile conference, a featured attraction of the Air Force Association Convention. In the event of war, the Air Force is planning to use a mixed force guided missiles against large targets and airplanes to destroy small targets. The Air Force is interested in the possibilities arising from Navy plans to develop a small type of space satellite. Air Force is dispersing its mission launching facility so widely that a direct atomic attack could not destroy more than one-third of the facilities or capabilities in a single installation. In New Orleans, this is Alfred M. Schock.
This is Stan Swinton in Belgrade, Yugoslavia. The 12 teenagers were excited and very happy at the Rome airport. They peeked at their passports, as do all new travelers, and giggled over the photos. The two girls wore pedal pushers and were very proud of them. Giuseppe sported a beanie. The other boys wore blue jeans, some faded, some inches too short. Their pinched faces and narrow chests were a tip-off to poverty and undernourishment. Back home, I would have figured them as slum kids off for fresh air camp. Giuseppe, who sat beside me in the old two-engine Yugoslav plane, fumbled with his seatbelt with growing embarrassment. I offered to help. He thanked me gratefully. He said, "You see, this is my first time in an airplane, although I am president of the Partisan Sons of Terni," unquote. I told him, "That's an important job. Are your friends from Terni, too?" Giuseppe said, "No, they are all presidents of local Federation of Partisan Children. We are going to Bulgaria as guests of the comrades there. We are going to a big vacation camp on the Black Sea for 6 weeks." For the next 4 hours of chatting with Giuseppe and his friends in the intimacy of the airborne plane, I was to learn a partial answer to a question many Americans ask themselves. How are new communists made in Western Europe by Moscow? Giuseppe was taken aback when I told him I was an American newspaper man. Then, as if to let me know he did not think being an American was too bad, he said, "Rocky Marciano is an Italo-American." He continued, saying, quote, "Other partisan sons and daughters have been invited to camp in Hungary. The communist nations are all comrades, and they invite us as comrades, even if Italy is not as far advanced," end quote. I told him that maybe he better wait and see Bulgaria before he decides. How would he like to visit the United States? Giuseppe thought a minute and then smiled. "I would like to go very much to see Hollywood and meet Rocky Marciano. However, nobody ever asked us to go to a camp in America. The Bulgarians and Hungarians and Russians ask us." At Belgrade, the youngsters waved friendly goodbyes to me and headed cheerfully toward the Bulgarian indoctrination camp, where they would be told that America, which never invited them, was a place of evil. In Belgrade, this is Stan Swinton.
This is Hollywood Minute with Erskine Johnson behind the screen. Daryl Zanuck apparently is serious about filming The Secret Crimes of Joe Stalin, with Richard Carr already writing the first draft of the script. But Yul Brynner's recent outburst about being mentioned by Zanuck for the role of Stalin is indicative of general Hollywood feeling about this film. I agree. The movie shouldn't be made. Let Russia make its own propaganda films. Quoting Brynner, "I wouldn't touch the part with a 10-foot pole and the best American-made rubber gloves," unquote. This week, Brynner and gorgeous Deborah Carr opened with the pure entertainment delight, destined to be a classic among motion pictures. Rodgers and Hammerstein's The King and I opens around the country. Great costumes, great music, great singing, great story. Even Winchell likes it. Marlon Brando and Glenn Ford spiked the rumor that they were at each other's Adam's apples during filming of Tea House of the August Moon in Japan by denials. Now they're making sure that the feud stuff stays buried by breaking bread together every lunch hour in the MGM Studio Cafe. I'm Erskine Johnson with the Hollywood Minute.
The Western Big Three tonight called for a 24-nation conference in London August 16th to work out an international system of control for the Suez Canal. The French embassy in Cairo is advising its nationals tonight to leave Egypt while tension over the Suez lasts. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Tim Michaels has this message from Gamble's Department Store.
Gamble's has a way for you to save up to 25% on their big Silver Star value going on right now. They have the Englander Hotel Special. Mattress and box spring, both pieces, $59.88, $79.50 value. $5.88 down, $125 per week, payable monthly. Then you can save up to $50 on the famous Haddon Hall 2- and 3-piece bedroom suites. Full-size bookcase bed, triple dress, $179.95. And the lined oak panel bed chest dresser, valued at $249.95, now $199.95. Always better ways to get great buys at Gamble's, 1109 Tower Avenue in Superior. Back to you, Pat the Cat.
It looks like Dr. Salk's vaccine is working. The Wisconsin Board of Health reports that infantile paralysis cases the first 6 months of this year are far less than incidents in the corresponding period last year when Wisconsin suffered its worst outbreak in history. There were 69 cases of polio reported so far this year, as compared with 168 at the same time a year ago. The 1956 total includes 25 paralytic cases as compared with 78 a year ago. And we'll end with our other top story this August 2nd, 1956. The Grand Army of the Republic living history ends as Albert Wolson dies in Duluth at age 109. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has the story.
Good evening, Pat. The last living member of the Grand Army of the Republic died today. Albert Wolson, at 109 years old, died at St. Luke's in Duluth this morning. It was a quiet end for the Civil War veteran whose century of life had its turbulent chapters early. He lapsed into a coma early Saturday and never regained consciousness. His death certificate will simply read, "Died of old age." The drummer boy, who was, as he put it, scared to death the first time he fired a cannon, outlived 2,675,000 of the Boys in Blue. He joined up in 1864 at the age of 17 after his father, Willard Wolson, was wounded and died at the Battle of Shiloh. Mr. Wolson entered as a private in Company C of the 1st Minnesota Heavy Artillery Regiment as President Lincoln made urgent calls for more troops. He was detailed to the regular drum corps and served with Union forces for 6 months in combat and 6 months doing occupation duty in the South. Thousands of cards and congratulations, including from the White House, poured in for the kindly old man with a booming voice on his birthday after he reached 100. At 106, he shoveled snow from his front sidewalk, quote, "so the postman won't have any trouble getting in." At 107, he rapped out a snapping roll on a snare drum and sang in a resounding bass voice, quote, "tramp, tramp, 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 the boys are marching." Wolson was never at a loss for words. Some of his comments in recent years included on war, quoting him, "more true religion is probably the only solution to war. Force is wicked. If we want to keep the peace, the best way is to be strong. War, as I see it, is unnecessary for the last two generations, and beyond that, no prophet can say." On military training, he said, quote, "all of our young men should learn strict military discipline and obey orders. A brief period of military training is good for the boy," unquote. His personal hero, "General Grant was my man. I loved and respected him. He had plenty of horse sense," unquote. Longevity, "you must have moderation in all things." His legacy, "I have a good legacy to leave my children. They come from good stock. I have led a good moral life. The only habit I've had that some might have considered bad is smoking cigars." He smoked 8 a day. Wilson recalled an incident while stationed in Chattanooga about a possible attack by rebel forces under General John Hood. Quoting his account, "one day the colonel handed me the end of a long rope. He said, when I yell, you stand on your toes, open your mouth, and pull. The rope was a lanyard. The first time the cannon went off, I was scared to death," unquote. After his discharge, Wolson returned to his parents' home at Mankato, Minnesota in October of 1865. His family had moved there when he was 15 from Watertown, New York, where he was born February 11, 1847. Quote, "I was jack of all trades after the war. I worked in logging camps. Then when I was about 85, I retired to take life easy," unquote. He moved to Duluth in 1905 at age 58. A strong advocate of thrift, Wolson would drop in unannounced at grammar school classrooms and talk to youngsters about the merits of saving money. Before he left, he would give each child a penny. His son-in-law and daughter, Mr. and Mrs. John Kolbus, lived with him in his Duluth home in recent years. He referred to his daughter as "my wonderful girl" and to her daughter, Frances, as "my good pal." Wolson had 13 other children in addition to Mrs. Kolbus. His first wife died in 1901, his second in 1949. Six of his children passed before him. Funeral services will be on Monday at the Duluth National Guard Armory with the burial at the Park Hill Cemetery.
The death of Albert Wolson leaves these three surviving veterans of the Civil War all members of the Confederate forces: W.W. Williams, 113, of Franklin, Texas; John Salling, 109, Slant, Virginia; and William Lundy, 108, of Laurel, Florida.
Ever meet Mr. Wolson?
Once, when they dedicated a bust of him at Duluth City Hall 2 years ago. The bust was paid for by pennies donated by Duluth school children. I got to shake his hand.
Well, newsman Pat Kelly, good report there, Daddy-O. Let's see what the weather's got cooking for Thursday, August 2nd, 1956. Thunder boomers tonight and tomorrow with a low of 54 and cooler tomorrow with a high of 65. Hey, cats and kittens, life is strange. So is love. New from Groove Records. Here's Mickey and Sylvia. And love is strange. Indeed it is. Right here on the Tim Michaels Dance Party on Kickin' KUWS.
Love, love is strange. Lot of people take it for a game. Once you get it, you never want to quit. After you've had it, you're in an awful thing. Plenty people don't understand. They think loving is money in the hand. Your sweet loving is better than a gift.
Singing Love is Strange and Don't We Know It on Kickin' KUWS. If you need chillin', get gassed at Lurie Gas Station. Lurie has the best fuel money can buy with the highest octane for less. Kind of like this radio show, man. And if you get gas there, you get a beautifully decorated 40-ounce refrigerator chiller bottle to keep your summer drinks cool. Lurie Gas, 727 Tower Avenue in Superior.
Colonel Joseph P. Buster Raffley here, people. As Vice Chairman of the Douglas County Civil Defense Department, Horn Division, I'm here to warn you that in precisely 5 minutes, we will, for the first time, test all 12 civil defense sirens in the city of Superior. That'll happen at precisely 18:20 hours. Now, this is a drill. If it weren't, it would mean death and destruction in a 20-mile radius raining down from the skies by commie bomber jets.
Comforting to know, Colonel. Society editor Harriet Farrig is on the telephone. Hello, Harriet.
I've got some more information.
We'll wait until the horns blow. Harriet is at the kiddie parade at Wade Bowl. How are the kids?
They're happy and secure and just plain having fun. The VFW Girls Drum Corps is leading the Catland Avenue Parade by Wade Bowl. They all have little picnic baskets for snacks once we get to the playground. Miss Gladys Lynch and Mrs. Fred Anderson are chaperones. I must say, these boys and girls are so well behaved. But they're excited. After the picnic, they'll get to have a pony ride. Go see the fish pond. There'll be dart games, a bottle toss, and freak show. They have everything.
Freak show?
Yes, that is odd, isn't it? I assume adults will be wearing masks or something.
Come to think of it, Machine Gun Kelly said he's got a really cool gig tonight at Wade Bowl.
Miss Fufog, Colonel Joseph P. Buster Raffaele here. Will you do us all a favor? Warn the kiddies that in exactly 4 minutes, civil defense sirens will be going off around the city. Now, these may scare the dickens out of a little dickens, so prepare them.
Oh, thank you, Colonel. Oh, goodness. I'd better hurry. Bye-bye.
Another great interview, Pat.
Just doing my job.
And cats and kittens, we're going to do our part in the civil defense test. I want everybody to open their windows in the car or pad and get ready to crank up the sounds when I give the cue. First, let's jam with the Eldorados with At My Front Door on the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
Crazy little mama comes knocking, door, the knocking at my front door, door, door. Crazy little mama comes knocking, knocking at my front door. Crazy little mama comes knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. I woke up this morning with a feeling of despair, looking for my baby and she wasn't there. Heard the one knocking, much to my surprise, there stood my baby looking in my eyes. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. If you got a little mama and you want to keep her neat, keep your little mama off my street. Same thing will happen like it did before. She come knock, knock, knocking at my door. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. Crazy little mama come just like she did before.
Knocking at my door.
Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before.
J. Records, the Eldorado's 1955 hit At My Front Door on Kickin' KUWS.
Civil defense siren drill coming in 5, 4, 3.
Get ready, cats and kittens.
I lost my place.
You are at 2.
Roger that. 2, 1. Siren test alert underway. I said siren alert. Underway.
Okay, cats and kittens, crank up your radios.
I really flip over Tim Michaels. He's my boss, baby.
What on God's green earth is I
I figured in case your siren drill melted down, we'd have a backup mass alert plan. Pretty Murgatroyd, eh, Clyde?
Clyde? Who's Clyde? I need...
You are! Clyde. Who? What? Criminy, it's Hep Talk, you dig?
Station Chief Engineer Joe Gardonio to save the day by changing the subject.
My fellow engineers and technicians are eyeballing the new civil defense siren system. They figure it'll be ready to blow in less than 10 minutes.
Just a few bugs in the system. And that, people, is why we have tests.
They can use my alert system.
Cheap DJ sound effects.
He'll probably have a whoopee cushion next.
Well, while we wait, let's review the fascinating history of the Civil Defense Siren System. The warning tones have varied over the years, but was promulgated during World War II with first a 3 to 5 minute alert siren, and then another 3 to 5 minute wail of either short bursts or wavering tones that would signify an attack is imminent or already begun.
Bombs falling from planes would also do the trick. As fascinating as this is a perfect time to go live to Barker's Island on the Superior Bay with farm agent Claude. Call me Bertie Ebling. I hear Bertie's got some birdies.
Oh, clever, Tim. Clever. You radio announcers are a hoot. Get it? Owls are birds, owls hoot. And I work it in as a funny joke.
What's funny is how I seem to be getting cut off so often lately.
Oh, sorry, Joe. I just hurried over from the Horace Stone and Paul Anderson farms to cover this unbelievably exciting event about to occur here with the Douglas County Fish and Game League. Although I have to say, the conversation on the Stone-Anderson farms was riveting, just riveting. They were preparing their dairy calves for the 4-H show. Well, directors of the Douglas County Breeders Cooperative were on hand to make a huge, huge announcement that I have to share with everyone. Frozen semen.
All right. Now, I've heard smut in my day, but this potty mouth should go back to his barn and away from the innocent ears of women and children and good Republicans everywhere.
If you think about it, that's where children come from, and women have a big part of that, and so do some Republicans.
Well, sir, the Breeders' Co-op explained that from now on, they'll use 100% frozen semen from the Madison stud.
Madison thinks they're so...
Studley.
Lloyd Swenson of the Swenson Brothers Swedish Farm in Poplar pointed out that the old ways have to change if it means a better dairy herd. So, Lloyd said to put himself in the frozen semen category.
What about Barker's Island?
The Douglas County Fish and Game League, or the DCF&GL as we call it for short, is about to release 300 8-week-old ducks that they've raised from babies.
That'd be chicks. Raised from chicks.
300 chicks at Barker's Island? Man, wait for me.
No, not that kind of chick. Duck chicks.
I'm forgetting why I'm here. Why am I here?
The idea is to tag each duckling. So when the DCF and GL shoot the ducks during the hunting season, they can tell if they returned here where they were raised. It'll also draw more hunters because there'll be more ducks to shoot. And here's an interesting tidbit that you can put in your pipe and smoke. How do you tell the difference between a wild duck and a tame duck? Tame duck feathers aren't waterproof. So until they adapt to the wild, their little tail sections sink. Anyway, I'll be standing by here for a live shot, I think you call it. The shot part is ironic. On the actual release, which is expected in the next 5 minutes or so.
About the same time the sirens are supposed to go off.
Sounds like a pretty predictably thin plot to me.
Time for a KUWS Radio Twin Spin. Two great gal groups. Here's the Teen Queens and Eddie My Love, followed by the Cordettes on the Tim Michaels Ducky Dance Party.
Eddie My Love, I love you so much. Me, why?
This is a KUWS Twin Spin.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Bum, 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 bum. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Bum, 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 bum. Give him two lips like roses and clover. Bum, 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 bum. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Sandman, I'm so alone. Bum, 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 bum. Don't have nobody to call my own. Bum, 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 bum. Please turn on your magic beam. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him the word that I'm not a rover. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Sandman, I'm so alone. Don't have nobody to call my own. Please turn on your magic beam.
Yes?
Bring us a dream. Give him a pair of eyes with a come hither gleam. Give him a lonely heart like Pagliacci. And lots of wavy hair like Liberace. Mr. Sandman, someone to hold.
Someone to hold.
Would be so peachy before we're too old. So please turn on your magic beam.
KUWS Twin Spin, the Cordettes, and Mr. Sandman. And before that, the Teen Queens with Eddie My Love.
All right, people. When the CD siren sounds, practice with your family and or neighbors, if you get along with them, on what you would do once you hear the CD sirens. Now, I brought along a recording for your consideration, starring Bert the Turtle.
Dum-dum, deedle-dum-dum, deedle-dum-dum. Deedle-dum-dum, there was a turtle by the name of Bert. And Bert the turtle was very alert. When danger threatened him, he never got hurt. He knew just what to do. He ducked and covered. Ducked and covered.
He did what we all must learn to do.
You and you
and you
and you. And cover.
Be sure and remember what Bert the Turtle just did, friends, because every one of us must remember to do the same thing. That's what this film is all about. Duck and cover.
This is an official civil defense film produced in cooperation with the Federal Civil Defense Administration and in consultation with the Safety Commission of the National Education Association.
Produced by Archer Productions, Incorporated. Hey, Bert, come on out and meet all these nice people, please. Oh, all right. We really can't blame you. You see, Bert is a very, very careful fellow. When there's danger, this is the way he keeps from being hurt. Sometimes it even saves his life. That's why these children are practicing to duck and cover just as you do in your school.
Hey, totally dumb, don't sing along. It ruins the song. Yeah, all right. Now, this is an official civil defense film produced in cooperation with the Federal Civil Defense Administration. So everything Bert the Turtle and that guy with the nice, authoritative, yet calming voice says is true. Now, that said, ducking and covering is not advised when you hear civil defense sirens.
You see, the whole purpose for ducking and covering like Bert does in a shell is a sneak atomic attack. The idea is that if you see a sudden flash, Duck and cover immediately. Don't go to the window and see what it is. Doing so could mean grave injury from shards of glass or vaporization. Ducking and covering will help you avoid only the glass shards part.
Which brings us back to Barker's Island and the release of the duck chicks whose butts may sink.
They've released all 300 ducks, but they're just sitting there, not doing a thing. Weird.
Well, since there's nothing happening at Barker's Island and the sirens are still silent, let's roll with Smiley Lewis making noise with I Hear You Knockin' on the Tim Michaels Dance Party. Rocking and rolling and knocking on Kicking KUWS. We've got the phone lines jam with cats and kittens wondering about the CD siren. Harriet's at Wade Bowl with the Kiddies Carnival. Birdie's at Barker's Island with 300 feathered chicks. What's the bad news, Colonel?
Sirens in 5, 4, 3. No funny business, McMichael.
No.
2, 1. Begin the test now. I said now.
You mean now? Now?
Well, what's the use of having a countdown if I have to explain it? What the hell is that?
There goes the duck quick, quick, bust it all, flying to beat the band.
Oh, no, the sirens are frightening the children here. The kids are running and the dogs are running. The ponies are running. The clowns are running and they're tripping over their big shoes.
DCF and GL, people are running. Fish are jumping. Oh, the humanity.
Ha! Works like a charm, eh, Colonel?
I feel great.
Ha!
Nothing like a blaring, wailing doomsday sound to cheer a body up.
Time to cut out, cats and kittens. We'll be back same time, same dog pound, the good Lord willing, and we don't have to duck and cover. For Lou Martin, Pat Kelly, Harriet, Bertie, Colonel, and Joe.
And Albert Wolfson, Grand Army of the Republic, the old drummer boy, has joined his comrades for their final bivouac.
I'm Tim Michaels, rocking your world.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1956, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Your players are Tom Martinson, Don Hansen, Danielle Cating, Jennifer Simonson, Ryan Matuzak, Jim Packard, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1956 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.
Oh, bye.